Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Review Yourself. Sarah's back. I don't know why I paused there, as if I couldn't think of anything to say.
That was very dramatic.
I know. Sifu's going to be like, guys, it's time to say goodbye. No, I am. Sarah from Wayne Horizon's back.
Hello.
She's joining me. She's joining us. No, there's no us. It's me, isn't it? To review The Da Vinci Code, the extended cut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a film that people already complained was too long, they were like, yeah, let's make it half an hour longer. Let's really, like, drive this home. But, yeah. I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, I don't know where you've been. I genuinely don't. The Da Vinci Code, so it's the Blu-ray that you get this edition on. I think there's only Germany where they released this extended cut on DVD, but they didn't do it anywhere else. So it's Blu-ray for the extended cut. So Dan Brown's international bestseller comes alive in the film The Da Vinci Code. Who wrote this? Directed by Ron Howard. Join symbologist Robert Langdon, in brackets Tom Hanks, with amazing hair, by the way. Worth watching this film alone for Tom Hanks' hairstyle. Like, it's something else. And cryptologist. I thought it said cryptid there, but it's cryptologist. Cryptologist. That'd have been a good link. And cryptologist Sophie Nouveau, in brackets, Audrey Tato, whatever. There'll be some, I'll warn you now. Like, I did French at GCSE, but I failed. So I apologise if anybody from France is listening or anybody with French lineage, because I'm going to massacre some of these surnames later. Like, oh, you'll cringe. But, you know, I'm English. It's half expected, isn't it? Let's be honest.
It's traditional.
Yeah, absolutely. As much as our countries have always been very harmonious, you know, hopefully this doesn't rock the boat. In their thrilling quest to solve a bizarre murder mystery that will take them from Paris to London, which isn't very far. I mean, it's like
a
train stop, but it's fine. And behind the veil of a mysterious ancient society where they discover a secret so powerful it could shake the very foundations of mankind.
Yeah, that's a really bad synopsis. Like,
terrible, isn't it?
Where did you get that from?
It's from the Blu-ray, like the back of the cover. Yeah, and it's that bad, right, that the special features sound better. Listen to this. Special features exclusive to Blu-ray. Well, yeah. Select scenes. Eh? Shouldn't it be selected scenes? Whatever. Select scenes commentary with director Ron Howard. Unlocking the code, picture-in-picture video. That's
kind of cool.
Yeah. Hey, God, do you remember when they tried to set all this up? This cine chat. Send on-screen instant messages to your friends around the world while watching the movie together.
What? What the hell is that?
You could watch along and then send messages. I don't even know if it's still going.
I genuinely don't know.
Is that why the
Blu-ray player wants to connect to the internet then?
Yeah, and then there's a symbol that says BD Live. I'm not going to say anything else. BD Live enabled. Yeah, so. And so as I might have mentioned, this film's 174 minutes long. Now, they added, like, 28 minutes extra, so it's, like, 2 hours and 54 minutes. And, yeah, it's long.
It feels like almost 3 hours of film.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind it as such, but I think you have to. It's, again, one of those films that you have to be in the mood to watch. Like, you can't just throw it on. Angels and Demons, you can throw on and watch, because it's more fast-paced. This one, not so much, especially the extended edition, because for a film where one of the criticisms was that it was a bit slow, which, to be fair, given I watched this when I was like 13 on a ferry of all places, it was pretty slow. Well, we were on the way to Belgium, and funny enough, but it was not great. So welcome, Sarah. Anyway, sorry, I was just gabbering away at myself there, wasn't I?
It's all right. Yeah. Thank you for suggesting this. Like, you are right about, you know, you can't just impulsively watch this, because I had this Blu-ray, like, since you suggested it, which was probably like a month ago, if not more, just on the side. And I was just not in the mood to watch this film until, like, you know, the mood struck me. I was like, I'm going to watch Da Vinci Code. And I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I had such a good time, because I haven't seen this, I think, since it came out. So it was a real treat to watch it after that long. And just like, it is, the cast is absolutely ridiculous. Like, it is stacked with some just great cast, but it is, I loved it. Like, it's not a great film, but I had so much fun watching this film.
It's 18 years old, this film.
Yeah, 2006, it says, which I'm like, I would have been in, you know, high school.
Yeah, secondary, DME.
Like year 8 or something. Like, I remember watching this when it came out, and I don't know what I got from this at the time. Like, I clearly understood some of it, but I'm not going to lie, watching it now, there's still, like, the third act. There's a big, like, chunk where I don't quite understand what's gone on, and then I kind of get back, and it's when everyone starts double-crossing each other.
Right, well, we'll get to that.
I got that's a bit lost.
Well, I actually think this extended cut, actually, I think it actually helps, because it fills a lot of the gaps in. Because, like, the original film's over 2 hours anyway, like 2 hours, 5, 10 minutes, whatever it is. It's just over 2 hours. But there's bits in it that kind of, you're like, I don't get why they've appeared. Like, Aringa Rosa and Silas just appear out of nowhere. And it's like, what's, whereas this one, like, they really flesh out a lot of the characters. And yes, it makes it a lot longer and it makes it more like a book. It feels very, makes it feel even more old fashioned, which is very kind of Ron Howard anyway. But it's who directed it. Like, I really enjoyed it. So, like, at the beginning, for example, like, the only bit they don't extend, which I really wanted them to extend, was the bit where they're talking about, because they extend the beginning part of it where Jacques Saunier, who's like the curator of the Louvre in Paris, he is like running, and they show more of him getting chased, which I like, because in the original it was like he just runs for a bit, then goes to a door and then rips a painting off and a thing falls down. You're like, what's going on here? And I kind of liked the fact they kind of stuck with it a bit longer and made it feel like more of a chase. But they didn't extend the changing meanings of symbols, you know, where Langdon's giving his speech. And in the original version, which I always thought was a massive plot hole, they think he's killed Saunier because he's wrote his name on the fly in his own blood, which, I mean, is pretty compelling evidence, but circumstantial at best. I always thought, but he was on stage in front of, like, hundreds of people at that point. But then in this, they insert a little bit saying, oh, no, you had your light on. Like, he was killed at 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. or 8 a.m. or whatever. You had your private light on in your hotel suite, which I thought was a swanky hotel. Never heard of that before. Must be a European thing. And then I thought, oh, okay, right, that makes sense. That they're like, yeah, it's tight, but he could still have done this. Whereas in the original, it's like, we've seen what's happening whilst he's on stage. So how on earth are they linking into this? That's kind of how it feels.
Weird, isn't it? Like, they just kind of, the original cut, he's just very quickly, he's involved with it. And, like, he just gets pulled along for the rest of the film being like, I don't really know why I'm here. And also, like, you know, everyone's kind of got their own motives for doing what they're doing. And I feel like, they explore that a little bit better. Because, like, the police chief, played by, like, Jean Reno, like, he has his own reasons for, like, embroiling him in it, which they talk about later. But again, it makes a bit more sense when you kind of get a bit more information about how all of these kind of conspiracies fit together, because it's just lots of people, you know, working towards their own ends, really, in a way that just happens to involve fucking just Tom Hanks getting just dragged through the whole thing. It's awful.
Whereas in this, it feels, it's a lot, because it's like, even a scene later on where Sophie Nevers says to him, look, like, when we land, go to your embassy, like, get out, stay out of this, get out of it type thing. Whereas, like you say, in the original, the cinematic cut, which most people who listen to this will probably have seen, this fleshes it out a bit. And I've got to say it now. I was going to save it till later, but we'll probably circle back to it in the verdict part. It heard me as if I'm structuring this. But it was the bit that, for me, it's like, if you didn't enjoy the original Da Vinci Code and thought it was a bit long and a bit ponderous, this cut's not going to be for you. Like, give it a go, by all means. Like, I'd never tell people not to, but if you weren't a fan of the original, this isn't going to win you round. Because it's more of the same.
It ramps up the pace or really,
or the gore or anything like that. No.
Like I said, it just kind of extends a lot of the scenes that were already there. Like, from what I was reading about it, because, like I said, I don't, unlike him, I can't remember exactly the original cut, spoilers, but I know they extended the dinner that they have with Lee Teabing quite a bit, and added a bit more of the back and forth back in. But again, that's like one of the really key scenes of the film. And like I said, if you didn't like that, then you're not going to enjoy this, because they've just kind of doubled down on a lot of what was already there. But like I said, I think added a lot more context, which is useful, but it doesn't change it. It doesn't take it to be, oh, it's a really like action-packed film now. It is. It's a lot of people just stuck in small spaces talking for a lot of the film.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. It's very literary, isn't it? It's very, like, I'm yet to read the book. I have started it. It's not the easiest. I don't find his writing the easiest to read, if I'm perfectly honest, at all. I'm surprised he became a bestseller. No offence. I personally find it hard to read, but clearly I'm in the minority. But I do think it's interesting, that, like, the way it's done. I love the whole idea of, like, how do we sift truth from belief? How do you sort centuries of historical distortion? Tonight, this will be our quest. And I was like, oh, little does he know, it will be. It'll be your night and your day. And I like the way that it plays out how you meet all the characters. So, you know, we meet Jacques Saunier, who's the creator of the Louvre. And I'll tell you one thing now, this isn't a joke. I'll be semi-serious at this point. Like, what surprised me was I was looking through the cast and, like, the amount of people who've passed away, I was like, oh, they've passed away. But there is, like, when you look at the work, I mean, it's 18 years old and there was...
Mm.
Quite old, you know, all the people in this, you know. So the guy who plays Jacques Saunier, the late Jean-Pierre Morel. I told you I'll butcher these. I do apologize. You've got Professor Robert Langdon, Tom Hanks, Lieutenant. I'm not sure how the French do it. Obviously, Americans, Lieutenant. British, the original correct way is Lieutenant. But anyway, let's not kick it off anyway. He's played by the late Etienne Chicot. We've got Captain Bezu Fash, played by Jean Reno. Silas the Monk, is played by Paul Bettany. And then there's the mysterious professor. And also the lady who plays the... Oh, what's her name? I've written it down later on. Oh, yeah. What do they call them? the thing... the sister. So Sister Sandrine, who's in the Church of Saint-Sulpice. Who gets killed with a big marker, which we'll get to later on. She's played by the late Marie-Francoise Ordelet, I'm not sure. Apologies. So that's what struck me. Like, a lot of people have passed away. So, but then, like you say, you realise, like, how old the film is. Like, it's 18 years old. Like, people are able to drink who were born the year this was flipping me.
Oh, my God.
When you put it in those, you know, at least in England, Britain. Sorry, America. Cut my ears for you. So, yeah, really, like, bitchy about the countries today. Sorry, I don't know what's going on. I'm excited. I haven't done this for a while. I really haven't. It's been a while. I've got to say as well, like, you were saying about when you watch it when you're older and you get totally different things from it. I'm like, God, Silas must be on, like, a pretty much constant course of antibiotics. Like, all those injuries. No. I'm like, man, like, this is why we've got, antibiotic resistant. Like, things because of you.
I know, he's just walking around with just giant wounds all the way through. Yeah. Like, he's great, by the way. Like, again, I had seen this film, but I didn't put together that it's Paul Bettany as Silas for some reason. So I watched it, I was like, oh my God, it's Paul Bettany.
Yeah, well,
he's great. He's one of those actors, though, that he really does just kind of disappear into roles. I know they say that about a lot of people, but it's. You look at what he's done, and it's hard to go. You're like, oh my God, that was him. Oh my God, that was him. Because
it's like our equivalent of, like, I know this is going to sound absolutely mad, but I think you'll know what I mean. He's like our equivalent of Nicolas Cage. He's done some really mad stuff. Like, I know now everyone will remember from Marvel, because, you know, the movie world began with Marvel, not. But he's done some awesome films. So he was in Master and Commander as, like, he played second fiddle at Russell Crowe in that. But he was marvellous in it as, like, the Doctor. And he's done, like, God, what was that cheesy film, The Romantic Wimbledon, which if you get a chance to watch is decent. You know, he did, what was that film he did where he's in A Knight's Tale, he's in A Beautiful Mind again with Russell Crowe. And what he did a film, what was that one where he was like an angel or something?
Priest.
Is it Priest?
No,
yeah.
Legion.
He did Legion, that's it. Yeah. Sorry, Legion, yeah. Oh, he's done a few like really kind of like really out there type things.
He really does. Like, and I know he's like said he's been kind of co-opted by Marvel, but he's been in such cool, like varied stuff as well. It feels like he just kind of does whatever's interesting to him, which I really love when actors do that. They just seem to be like, I'll do something weird, you know, because this is a weird role. Like, and he's putting everything into this role. He is fully committed to this role. It's great.
It really is. apparently, I don't know if you saw the trivia, but apparently they filmed different versions of him, like flagellating himself, where he was wearing like little black, like a loincloth, which I think would have looked like even worse, but that would have been a bit random, but I kind of get why they did that.
He's like, no, my butt's got to be out. It's got to be out.
It does not escape. It does not escape. So basically, an unknown hooded figure, well, we know who it is, it's Silas the Monk, who shoots Jacques Saunier in the Louvre Gallery, and he leaves a clue. He makes himself look like the Vitruvian Man, Leonardo da Vinci's Vitruvian Man, which everyone will know if you Google it or search it. You'll see what I mean. And he's like, P.S. find Robert Langdon, and the police obviously think, right, well, the French, whatever it is, like FBI, or whatever, they think, oh, like he's identified as killer, and they go and arrest Langdon at a book signing of all places, and which apparently the author of the book, he's there, but
I didn't go back to find him, but
it's not a film to go back on, is it? You're like, must keep going on.
I don't want to put the Blu-ray back into trouble.
and Bezu Fash, again, Jean Reno's character, he like isn't there for small talk at all. Like whenever Tom Hack, like Robert Langdon says anything, he just completely contradicts it, just as a matter of course, because he's like thinking, yeah, you're a murderer. Like I'm not small talking with you. And we kind of find out later on as to why that is. And I love the way he's like, oh, do you like our pyramid? And he's like, oh, it's beautiful. And he's like, oh, magnificent. He's like, it's a scar on the face of Paris.
Just
and, like,
to be a dick.
He's like, yeah. But apparently it is very divisive. I think I Am Pain created that, and it's a very divisive like piece of art. Some people love it, and other people are like, what is this? Like, look where you've put it type thing. But I did like the fact that, like, when you watch the original cut, I'm going to keep banging about this, you get, like, you see him running through the art gallery, and you think, an art gallery like the Louvre, of all places, like, surely, like, that would have CCTV up to the hilt. But then in this extended edition, it shows that, take a shot every time I say extended edition, Langdon kind of says, I take it none of these are real. Yeah. And he's like, no, of course they're not. And he's like, yeah, video's too expensive and it's easier to contain people. And that, again, answers the question as to why they haven't caught, like, a glimpse of who it is. Because he takes his hood down. Like, you'd be able to see who it is.
I know. Like, it needed to be there because, like, otherwise, just the whole premise doesn't make any sense. But it's like, yeah, literally just, like, a couple of short scenes. That's the kind of context I don't understand why they would have taken that out.
I think it was just to quicken it, or it was to quicken things up. But then it's like, I know that's the thing, and you think, well, why? Because you're quickening it up in places where you needed that information there, because otherwise it'd be like, why?
There's so many other places you can trim like 20 seconds if it's that important to you.
Yeah, but and I love Silas's accent in this. Paul Bettany's accent, he's like, tell me where he is. Stop now. I don't even know if it's... Is it meant to be Italian? Is it... I don't know what the hell it's meant to be.
It's Italian and Latin sometimes, because I was watching this, and I was like... okay, he's speaking Italian. And then he'd speak fucking Latin to someone else. And I'm like, hold on, am I just illiterate? Can I not... And do I not just know the difference? But then I looked it up. It's Italian and Latin, because it really bothered me. But, yeah.
Oh yeah, when he's on the foot, yeah, the whole like profisi and all that kind of yeah, mm-hmm. Latin, yeah.
Because I was like, I thought that was Italian, and I'm like, that's not Italian. Am I just dumb? But no, it's just Latin. Just Latin.
Yeah.
Clearly, Latin in school. Shame.
Well, yeah. we're not posh enough for that.
No, I don't want to.
Well, yeah, mine didn't even have grammar. So, and then you get to, what is this, Alfred Molina as
Bishop Aringa.
I'm not doing this.
He's up there for the stupidest names, by the way. I've put a little list of people with dumb fucking names in this.
Oh, the names in this. It's it reminds me of a film that I can't remember, but it'll come to me. Oh, yes, it does. I'll tell you what it reminds me of. It reminds you of Sleepy Hollow. You know that film where it's like Katrina Van Tassel, Baltus Van Tassel, and all that. That's what it reminds you of. Yeah, but at least I had an excuse. It was set like 200 years ago. This one's like now. Oh, and why are the French police driving around in a big Renault? Was it like the Renault Megane or whatever? It's not a Megane, it's the big Renault thing. It's horrible looking.
I don't know, French people are involved with this. I don't know how they're not like, can we have some normal names, please?
I don't know. Well, apparently, we'll get to the names because I don't want to spoil your trivia, but. You get Bishop Aringarosa, a pocket full of poser. Stop it. And he's talking to this teacher about Silas. So this mysterious teacher's in the middle and that he's like pulling the strings trying to find this Priory of Sion. And that they like gives the interview, and I like the fact they extend that interview a bit about chastity, tithing, self-flagellation. The fact that the media describe the Opus Dei as a brainwashing cult and God's mafia. Apparently it exists. I thought it was made up, but it exists apparently.
Yeah, apparently they released it.
So obviously we're not talking about the real one here. Because I don't want legal problems. We're not talking about the real one. We're talking about this fictional film, right? For anyone starts taking notes. Officer Sophie Nouveau, French police cryptology. She turns up but she's like, oh no, it doesn't mean like PS final. It means like Princess Sophie, find. I'm gonna have to be careful not to do that all the way through. I find Robert Langdon. She's like, Jacques Sonnier was my grandfather. And you're like, all right. Okay. Do you need to say it like that? I know you're French, but do you need to say it like that? She's so dramatic. He was my grandfather. Haven't seen him in 12 years after what I saw him do. You shouldn't have snuck home, should you? What your grandfather does in the safety and security of his own back garden with a group of friends is up to him. Anyway, sorry, go on.
I love her in this film, but like that whole bit with the PS signed Robert Langdon, like, always really bothered me because, like, you know, slight spoilers, like, you know, the police have got, at least some of them have got ulterior motives for going after him, but also, like, say you didn't and you're just part of that investigation and you found someone dead on the floor and they've written out this cryptic message also apparently being like, PS, this person killed me, do you want to go get them? Why would you think that that's the kind of thing that someone would do?
P.S. This gunshot wound fucking is really hurting me right now.
P.S. I've been murdered by this guy. Go find him.
It reminds me of... Oh, see, I don't know if you've seen it, but it reminds me of the Red Dwarf episode, Sirens, I think series 5 or 6, 5.
Might have seen 6. It. Go on, remind
Either me. Either way, it's the one where he says they like break into a spaceship and he's like... And it's like a guy writes out Sirens using a... What's the quote? Oh, God. Using a combination of his own blood and even his own intestines. That was meant to be Crichton. And then he says, and then Kat's like, yeah, but what I don't know is why he went to the bathroom using his kidney as a full stop. And Ruby's like, I don't think he used it as a full stop. I think it just kind of plopped out. That's what it reminded me of. who is like dying and decides like, best get the grammar right.
Because like, he was shot like in the chest, wasn't he? Like,
no, he was shot in the gut.
It wasn't like the kind of, you know, manly shot in the upper arm. You can kind of, you know, bandage it up. It was a mortal wound, and he spent the last of his time alive just writing out really quite a lot of writing on the floor, like really quite a bit. So did Silas like left him.
Well, he couldn't get to him, could he? Because he
no. He, no, 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 no. So he posed himself.
Yeah, yeah, because he says, doesn't he? He's like,
yeah, he does, yeah.
Professor, you must... Sorry, again,
I'm just trying to work out how he got all of this done when he was bleeding out the gut.
Well, to be... Well, because it can take hours to die of that. It can take hours.
Just very painful.
It's not a good way to go. It can take your hours. I don't think he lasts hours, maybe. But, I mean, he's kind of...
No, because he's using all his energy, just writing shit on the floor.
He's using a lot of... Yeah, as you can see, yeah, he definitely is. So, yeah. But no, he does all that to himself, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, no,
enough.
Of course he does. It just doesn't. it's just funny. Like, I'd imagine if there was CCTV, and they're like, "Come look at this CCTV. This guy got shot, right?" And then he spends like 25 minutes, just like he's measuring stuff on the floor. He's like, "I'll do it here. The lighting's best here. That'll be more dramatic."
Why did he take his pants? Why did he take his pants off?
What did he do with his clothes?
Yeah, wearing his clothes.
Eating them, I guess. Like,
like the neatly folded in the corner.
Like, could you not have gotten someone's attention in all of this time? It's like you had a lot of time to set this up. Surely there's something you do. Like, there's no CCTV in the Louvre, right? What about make a little fire? There's going to be, like, fire alarms and stuff. There's going to be some sort of smoke detector, and then people will come.
I don't think setting a fire in a room you're in is a good idea. I mean, what was he going
to
set the fire with?
Because no, to be fair, it might flood with... They might, like, take the oxygen out. But, like, also, the security thing must have been tripped, right?
Yeah.
Did no one come?
It depends what company you're using, really. I don't know.
Yeah, to be fair, it's out of hours, you know. They're not going to...
Yeah.
Someone's phone rang somewhere, and then they ignored it, and then he just bleeding down the floor.
Yeah, I mean, you would think it would. I don't know. You'd think with the Louvre, it would be. I mean, this isn't like Swindon Art Gallery, is it? Like, no offense to Swindon.
They would have like police. Surely they'd have a small security team for it. Presumably.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's a funny one, but I think he can't get out because that's the whole idea of the containment. So he can't get out. So he basically. He has to leave all these clues. And part of me is like, does he know that Robert Langdon like has an eidetic memory or almost a photographic memory? Does he know that? Because like the anagrams and stuff like that are all...
Maybe he mentions it in his book.
Yeah, maybe. God knows.
There are holes in this film. I'm going to stop
looking
at it apart because otherwise we're going to be here forever.
I mean, we'll be here for... Yeah, I mean, yeah. but... Oh, never mind. Dad's yawning. Sometimes I can see why they cut certain scenes down, like when they extend only a couple of times. I'm like, okay, I can see. So it's like the scene where they're walking along and they're talking about stuff, and you think, I get why they kind of cut these down a bit to make it a bit quicker paced. Because I get the impression they probably watched this original cut and were like, yeah, can you cut this down a bit? Because this feels like a much more complete film. In my eyes, this feels much more like this is what the film was meant to be before the studio were like, yeah, cut out like half an hour of this like that we don't need.
It's just films of this length are a hard sell, like in 2000.
Well, they used to be. Now it's like, oh, can you make it longer?
Yeah now they're not. But in 2006, like, you had to really justify. If your film was going to be over like 2 hours or 2 hours and a quarter or something, you really had to justify why it needs to be that length, because people just wouldn't go to see it. Because I remember like when The Dark Knight came out and people were like bitching about the length of that. And I think that was like the year before. But again, it really, even though it's really critically acclaimed, it had to justify.
Yeah. Well, The Dark Knight's 2008. Yeah.
But you remember how like people were pissing and moaning about that?
Batman Begins was a year before, and I don't think that's particularly short either. It might have been Batman Begins as well. But yeah, people, you know, but now it's like 3 hours and you're sitting there going, oh my God, I've watched an hour and a half of this film. I've got an hour and a half left. I've watched 2 hours of this film. I've got another hour left. At least it's an extended cut. You know what you're in for. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I knew this was a long film and, you know, I was willing to watch an extended version of it. But like I said, people in the cinema at the time would not have been. It'd be like, hey, do you want to watch one, like, Dan Brown books were popular but not very well like acclaimed. They're still not. So being like, hey, do you want to watch a 3 hour long adaptation of a Dan Brown novel? People would be like, no. I'm good.
No. Are you giving away the tickets free? No. I did like the fact they extend a lot of the chat between, like, Fash and Colette. Mm. Like, I like that because it feels like they've really fleshed out a lot. They flesh out, like, Eringa Rosa. But, yeah, anyway, to keep pushing on. We've got the Mona Lisa, you know, the whole So Dark, the Con of Man, the whole Madonna of the Rocks. They find the Fleur-de-Lis, which is the Priory of Sion's emblem. And then this is where we get a whole extra scene where between, which I really liked, and I don't get why they cut this out either.
It's
where they get, yeah, they get caught in the Louvre by the one police guy they've left there because they, oh yeah, because they threw out a soap with a tracking dot in it that they put, which I quite liked. I do think the extended cut spoils it a little bit. It shows you too much as to like getting the soap and things, whereas in the original it doesn't. But anyway, and then she basically threatens the Mona Lisa and is like, yeah, like put your gun down or I'm going to like take her head off type of thing. I'm going to like poke a hole in both her eyes type of thing. And I like that because I think it showed how like good, as clever as Langdon is, and he's a genius. He's not as good in like a real life situation. You can tell he's very bookish, whereas she's very good at problem solving in like the real world. Like you see that later on with the Border Boulogne where she's like in a park full of drug addicts and stuff. Like we see that later on. I like that the way this, because I think if anything, there's not a lot of her character to pin down in the unextended. I think this really does flesh her out a bit more. Did you think the same or?
Absolutely. No, yeah, it's a really good like early scene where it shows, like I said, she's holding her own in this because like it can, as the film goes along, it can tend to just kind of, she gets dragged along and she appears in the scene and people are just going to go, oh my God, you're like potentially one of the last sort of guardians of this truth thing. But that's all that people refer to her as. But like having this early scene where, like I said, she's absolutely instrumental in getting them out of there after her, you know, putting the whole plan to kind of tell him about Fash trying to set him up and everything, it just sets her up as like actually capable and intelligent and, you know, makes the character a lot better. Because as the film goes on, I think people just go, oh my God, it's you, you know, you're one of the last fucking guardians or whatever. And she just kind of stands there and people just gawp at her. But I don't know why they cut the scene. Yeah. It's a great little scene.
No, nor do I. And it like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I do get what you mean about later on. Because I mean, to be fair, who wouldn't want to? I mean, I'm just thinking about it. I'm mesmerised by the thought of chasing Tom Hanks with a mullet. I don't want to do anything, but it just that mullet alone, like it's not a mullet, but it looks very, it's very out there, isn't it? Yeah, because they get rid of it for the sequel, by the way. They totally get rid of it. It's just not spoilers.
I don't know what they were thinking when it comes to that. I don't know what the vision was.
Maybe they were like, yeah, you're in France, Tom. We need to play a little bit more European. So, I don't know the hell has hair like that. It's really out there. So we get the Priory of Sion. This is a myth. They protect the source of God's power on earth. And then not long after this, we get, because I'm going to try and go through this, but like skip it a bit. I don't want to like do it to death. We'll be here hours. We get Silas escapes from a prison. I think we've watched this before where he escapes like during a massive earthquake, which is a massive set piece of the film, which he just took out. And you're like, what? Why? Because I love that whole. It shows like that he basically ends up in prison because he stabs his dad, who's like beating up his mom, and I mean probably going to kill her. And he stabs him like, you are a phantasm, you're a ghost, or whatever. And Silas then he gets out. He like there's a big earthquake, and he escapes from this prison, walks the streets before he collapses. Bishop Aringarosa finds him. Nurses him back to health by giving him soup or something in a bowl. It's never specified what it is, but you can see that Ringo Ross has really been like every time he like wakes up, he's like ladling him spoonfuls of, you know, soup and belief or whatever he's got. I don't know what he's giving him. And then he like nurses him back to health, and then Silas then saves Ringo Ross from being like beaten to death in a Casa del Dios, in a house of God, which that was I liked all that, and that kind of stays in it, but it's very much cut down in the cut that you'll have seen, like the cut that anyone listening to this has seen, unless you are one of the strange lot like us me and Sarah, who have actually watched this extended one, which I didn't even know existed till last year, and I thought I was quite up on everything. But yeah, I thought it was a shame they cut that out. I don't. How about yourself? Were you?
No, it's interesting to get more of their relationship, because, like, if you just casually watch the film, you don't always realise how, like, interconnected those characters are. You know, it feels like you've got Silas just running around doing weird shit, and then you've got Bishop Ringarosa. But just having more things that shows, like, no, these two are, like, working together, and have, like, a genuine bond between them, to the point, like, you know, he will kill for him.
Yeah.
No questions asked.
Yeah, and then he, when, like, you know, snaps two guys next, doesn't he? To save
exactly.
Him.
And, like, near the end of the film where it starts going wrong, you feel bad for him, you know? I feel bad for both of them because, I don't know, at the very least, you could see why these guys kind of had a belief in each other, and it just kind of made it make a bit more sense. Like, a lot of what they added, I think, just made all of these different people's motivations for this make a bit more sense, and it really needed that, because otherwise you get about two-thirds through the film and it just feels like stuff is happening like rapid fire, and it doesn't really make any sense. But this is much better, I think, at, like, setting up what all different people's motivations are and how they interact with each other, instead of just, like, as I still got a little bit lost in the weeds a bit, but it's
We'll see if we can get your. We'll see if we can find our way out. But I think I like the fact, because, like, it really adds, like, context to a lot of things, because you get, like, in the cut, and you get it in this, but in the original theatrical cut as well, you get a bit where the bishop says to, like, I think another bishop, like, for sure there is no better, like, warrior for God than my Silas, or whatever he says. Mm-hmm. And, like, without all this context, it's a bit like, why?
Yeah.
Whereas when you watch, like, how he say, like, obviously, I know you see him save him in the original, but you don't see, like, you know, the fact that all of the rest of it, and you think, okay, that makes more sense as to why, like, they're like that. It makes sense. Again,
especially
with, like,
Silas, yeah.
Yeah,
sorry, I interrupted you. But
no,
like,
go on, sorry.
Adding the earthquake thing, and, like, him literally getting freed from prison by, like, a natural disaster, like a literal act of God, it kind of makes more sense why he would have this just devotion beyond, like, we see with anyone else. And then he gets literally rescued by, you know, a man of the church. It kind of, you get a little bit why he's so fanatical about it, like, not to the full extent, but again, it's just, it makes it. They just
minded
a bit more. Carry on.
No, I'd not thought of that. I hadn't linked together that the earthquake's an act of God. Or could be described as such. That totally passed me by. Oh, okay, yeah, okay. Right, that's really good. I like that. Again, even more so as to how the hell, why'd you take it out for?
Why did you take it out for? It's such a little scene.
Yeah.
It's a little tiny thing, but again,
maybe you didn't want to
link together. Maybe it's too overt for them, but, like,
or maybe they just thought, look, do we really need this set? Because I think I've read before, I think when I watched the special features, God, last year, and I think Ron Howard was, like, in the commentary, was very much like, we were really gutted to see it go, but it was, like, a big part we could, like, cut out. But I get, because you don't know, because you get director's cuts, or this is an extended cut, as it's termed. And you do wonder whether the directors are like, look, I'll do the film I need to, but I'll bring out what I wanted it to be. Whereas some directors are very much like, well, I don't do director's cuts because the film you've seen is my cut. And you're like, all right, calm yourself down. But I get what you mean. So there's like two different sides to it. But and again, like, they flesh out Basil Fash, and he like seems obsessed, and he's like, I know he's guilty. And the other guys around him, and, like, the other officers, they can't understand, like, why he's like this. They just don't understand, like, why is he so set on this? Because, like, yeah, he's called the bull, and once he goes to someone, he doesn't stop. And it's like, okay, but why is he so completely... He's got such tunnel vision, and obviously we find out later on that Bishop of Ringarosa broke the confession laws and said... to him that Robert Langdon had been to see him and confessed all these murders, and you didn't know how the darkness that was in this man's heart. And he tasked me to like save him, because I love the bit where he says like, who have I, obviously it's all in French, but he says, oh, who have I failed, like Colette, like who have I failed, like God himself, you know. And I like that, because obviously he's part of Opus Dei as well, but he just gets used in the end. But yeah, I did like that, the fact they fleshed it out more. Because like a lot of the times, the police or FBI or, you know, whatever it's called, in this, it's like initials, BC, whatever it is. Like they often get kind of, they're just somebody in the background, like trying to like appear every now and again, but they really like build that out in the original version as well, but also even more in this.
Like, it does feel like they kind of get it. More. Yeah, because there's a lot of times in this film where, like, the police, led by Fash, because, like I said, he's so kind of just narrowly focused in on Langdon, that they just keep making really stupid mistakes. But, like, they keep, all the people around him keep mentioning the fact that he keeps making stupid mistakes as well. Like, again, if you're, like, casually watching it and not paying attention, you'd be like, oh, why did they leave no one behind at the Louvre? Or just like, why did they wait for Fash to arrive later when they're at like Teabing's like manor and stuff? It's because like he's
in charge of it for half an hour, don't they?
He's making really bad calls because, like I said, he can't get an objective view on what's going on. I feel like they added a few more instances of people just being like, you can't be trusted on this, that you're not doing your job properly because of this case.
Colette calls him out, and he's like, how did you let them get away? He says, no, you let them get away. You're micromanaging this every turn. You don't let us breathe. And I like you see more of his character. Like, obviously they have to cut it out because they cut out the Mona Lisa bit. But I love when Fash is talking to the young cop who's like, let them go to save the painting. He's like, you shouldn't let the painting get ruined. He's like, I should have him put his cigar out in your hand. And I'm like, all right.
Nice to see him called out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because again, I don't think there was enough of that in the original cut. It was very much like, you feel like the police are just incompetent and just kind of always one step behind. Whereas like, no, he is kind of sabotaging it from in the middle of it, which again is easy to get lost, but like it comes across much better in this cut. Or maybe I just didn't realize it when I was younger. I don't know. There's always a chance.
But that's the thing as well, because like they're not like regular police. Like they're backed up by regular police, but they're like they're not. I can't figure out what the hell they are. They're like he kind of says like a kind of French FBI, and it's like, oh, okay, that kind of makes sense. But then they do make really daft mistakes, but it's good to see it called out, as you were saying. Robert Langdon and Sophie, they end up in the Bois de Boulogne, like a park, which is in quite a rough part of Paris, more like Taken, really. And they go into the park, and there's like extra lines in it, because I do love this film. So, like where he's saying like, oh, police don't come into the park and stuff like that. So it's very much a no-go area. Again, she's part of the police, so she knows where they wouldn't be. Again, very, very clever. And she, like, they have this really, like, interesting moment where she gives this drug addict money. She's like 50 euros for all your stuff. I go get something to eat, and they have, like, the music plays, and he seems to get this almost, like, it's like a mythical, magical moment type thing. You don't quite know what's going on. And I think it's just, but it's not massively overtly played. But when you like watch it back, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's. I love that bit because you don't quite know with the revelation later on that, spoilers, she is the last living descendant of Jesus Christ. Like, you think, oh, okay, like.
It's nice that there's a callback to it. It's really cool. Yeah. It's a nice little. Especially considering it's such a small scene in, you know, like what is just an absolute barrage of like events. Like, I don't know what the time frame of this is, but it's got to be like a couple of days, maybe.
Well, he mourns about it, doesn't he? He's like, I need to find out what's going on. My shoulder's jammed. I've been shot at. I'm bleeding. And he's like, he's proper annoyed. I should be at home with a book.
His plan was go to the hotel after the book signing, maybe have some dinner. But like I said, it's a tiny little scene, but it's cool that it is called back to, and also cool that he remembered it, because you know, they talk a big talk about his like eidetic memory or, you know, what he close to, but it, you know, mostly it just comes down to weird like visualization things like anagrams. But then him bringing up like little instances like that is a really nice way of using it. And then again, he's like putting all the puzzle pieces together in an interesting way. Was that scene in the original one or no?
Which one? Oh, the bit in the park.
In the park.
Oh yeah, that's in there. Yeah, yeah. I think there's that bit between her, because he says later on, he's like, oh, maybe that addict will never touch drugs again, because like she does a thing later on as well, not too far ahead, where they're in the back of the armored car, and she like he's claustrophobic, and she puts her hands in his head, and very much it seems to calm him down. And I like, again, the film. See, I know there was a lot of controversy at the time, but I do think it's fantastical, and it's very much mythical, and it's very much fictional. But it does have moments where it kind of glimmers towards that kind of, you know, you can take this whichever way you want. I think it would have been very easy for them to, like, not have any of that in there and just be like, yeah, well, you know, Jesus was a man in this kind of fictional timeline we've got, and we need to find out the truth and blah, blah. But they don't. They have these moments where they allude to, actually, maybe he was magical. Maybe he was connected to God. Whatever that may be. So I do like the fact they have that, like, that grey area there, like, that uncertainty. Because, like, well, as you know, I love a film where it gives you something to talk about and something to kind of, not all the time. Like, you know, we all love an Extraction every now and again. But it is nice, which is a great film, by the way. And you kind of, I do like it when you get to kind of think and um and ah about, oh, could it mean this? Could it mean that? I do think that makes for a much better film than just like, oh yeah, no, they're not. Like, or someone turns water into wine, which I know they have a bit of a gag about later on.
Absolutely. They could have not added anything like that. Like I said, it could have just been, like I said, they do a lot of talk about, like I said, the thing from the speech, historical distortion versus original truth. They do a lot of talk about, you know, just like, like you said, Jesus the man and these people that existed, and just them, talk about them as like historical figures. And then you get on the flip side, like most of the religious figures you see are just kind of either bureaucratic to the point they just don't do anything, or like fanatical. And they could have just left it at that, in that you've got these two real polar extremes, but like putting someone that's kind of in the middle, you know, very much like a bit doubting but has some sort of mysticism about him, is kind of cool. I said they didn't have to do it, like you said, it could have been just like, you know, religion is a scourge, but they're like, you know, left the door open for a little bit of something more interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I can't wait to the sequel, because you'd like the sequel. Great. Silas digs up so that, you know, he goes to the church, it lies beneath the rose, which is what was told to him by Jacques Saunier and presumably, I think, two other men that he also killed, which you see in this version that you don't see in the other one, which again fleshes it out nicely. And he digs like beneath the rose line, and he finds this, like, it's like almost like a grave marker type thing, but it's a big massive plaque that says Job 38. Which I think is 38:11. And it's like, he's like, do you know what it means, sister? Because obviously he does, because he reads the Bible a lot. And she says, hitherto shall thou come, but no further. Which I think is a great line, to be fair. Just in terms of like, yeah, we've sold you down the river, and this is where it ends. Because that, she knows when she hears that, because she tries to ring Jacques Saunier, she tries to ring them all. Because there's like a guardian and like three or four seneschals under, like, these are guardians of the Grail, and she thinks they've all been killed, and she's trying to get in touch with them. She's like, the lie has been told. So they've all clearly said, look, if anyone ever comes for us and you know, your life's in danger, or you need to get rid of them, even though it's probably going to cost you your life, tell them this. And we know that at that point, the lie's been told. We know they're onto us. We can get, you know, Mary Magdalene shifted, or her body shifted. It's a very northern way of explaining it. Get her moved.
Get this one
someone on the phone. Like, yeah, Terry, Yeah, it's me. Yeah, it's the Senna show. Yeah, would it get Mary Magdalene shifted? Get him. No, honestly, mate. There's a guy here with one of them. You know them markers you get? I don't know why we've got them in the church. I told the priest to get rid of them. He's taken down the rope thing and he's smashing up the floor. So the lie's been told. Get her shifted now. No, don't use Pickford's. The rubbish. No, get the fan from Gordon and get it moved now. Get her moved. Leave the little rose in the pot. Don't forget the rose in the pot. Yeah, why do we do the rose in the pot? I don't know, mate. Just do it. We've always done it. Does it need to be a real rose? Just get moving, will you? I don't know.
Just do it. Just you got it. Barbara's you gotta get always up got that winding stairs after all. Yeah, so you want to start now.
Yeah, get her under the stairs. Get her out of there. Get a rose from Barbara. She's always got some of it. Yeah, you got. You can imagine. Get her shifted. And then, the fact that Robert Langdon is telling the story about how every Priory story ends in bloodshed, and saying that the Priory's military arm were the Knights Templar, and the whole invasion of the Holy Lands was just a ruse, was a cover story to find an artifact. And she's like, "Oh, did they find it?" He's like, "Well, put it this way, they stopped searching one day and fled immediately to Rome to see the Pope. And then the Pope gave them unlimited power. Then, God knows how many years later, they were too powerful. So he declares them devil worshippers. And these simultaneous plans are opened, or messages are opened all across Europe. And they all get wiped out. And the plan goes off like clockwise. It was Friday the 13th. I love all those little historically scenes that are about they're about as historically accurate as Braveheart. But just enjoy yourself.
They're just fun.
Yeah. And I like the way it's all filmed. And she's like, "What are you talking about? I don't know about any of this." And he's like, "Yes, you do. Like, almost everyone on Earth has. You just know it as the Holy Grail." Yeah. And of course, Sister Sandrine, bless her, she says to him, "Yeah, this is how far you'll come, and no further." And she's like, "Jesus had but one true message." And we don't find out what it is, because she just gets pummeled in the head. And in this version, they linger on her face, whereas they don't in the other one.
Messed up.
Yeah, rough. And, but again, you get Teabing saying it later on, you asked what would be worth killing for. And Langdon says, "We've been dragged into a world of people who think this is real and will kill for it." And then there's people like her and the other Senechals and, what's his face? Her grandfather, Jacques Saunier, who were prepared to die for this, are very much prepared to go, "Yeah, I will die to try and keep this a secret." So then we meet, we see Alfred Molina, and he sits on the council of the Opus Dei sect, who have been the Pope, the Vatican won't back them. And then again, they extend that scene where he's what does he say? The Vatican's the Vatican's rejection of supporting us is impious and cowardly. And he true Christian values are in bled. And he pours all the wine over the table. So yeah, I liked all that. That was good. I enjoyed. Don't like yourself, but I enjoyed all that. I enjoyed a good rant. And then especially the scene after it.
Yeah.
Where everyone else is "Yes, we can." And then he's just I don't presume I act. And then the bit later on where he's like, I love the fact that he added the scene where he's like, "That was a good speech." And he was like, "That little shit should know better than to try politics with me." I thought, yeah, go on.
It's good. I do what they added to just those scenes again, because there's so many moving parts in this film. There's so many players when it really gets going that just any little added bits of okay, this is what these guys are working for. Just really helped it out. And I said, just giving a little bit more time to talk about what this weird little kind of religious board seems to do. Because, we just see him have this cryptic meeting. But seeing a little bit more about kind of how they interact, and knowing that even within this secret society, basically, he's kind of going off on his own a little bit. Is quite useful to have, I feel. But I like any scene with a dinner pie. That sounds really basic. I just love seeing people sit around and You know, and they have like that nice little glass of wine they're sat in front of the fire. I like it. It humanizes people. You know, you could be an absolute freak, but if they show them like sat in front of a fire with a little glass of wine, I'm like, okay.
I don't know what to say to that. That might be in over 2 years of podcasting the strangest thing I think I've ever heard anyone say. And that's I mean, maybe because I'm not a big fan of wine, and we don't really do dinner parties up here. We do like a buffet tea. You know what buffet tea is? We have. I sent you the video. So.
Oh yeah, you sent me that great video. I just like it. I don't know why. It's just one of those things in film. I enjoy it. I like seeing people eat.
Anyway, where the hell were we? Da Vinci Code.
We're talking about Erin Garosa.
Yeah, Apocryphal Imposer. Stop it. Right. And I can't help it. We meet Andrea Vernier, who's this head of this Swiss bank. And out of nowhere, like, you get Jürgen Prochnow, the captain from Das Boot, like, out of absolutely nowhere. And he's great. Like, it's a shame I've not seen him in more stuff, because he's... Again, he's like one of those actors that you watch and you're like, yeah, you like a lot, like all the actors in this do, they all bring something to the table. Like they're all like you said,
yeah,
putting it in young people speak that, you know, the cast is stacked. Sounds like a really bad advert, doesn't it? But yeah, it is.
So. And I said they're all,
it really is,
giving it their all as well.
Well, yeah, they were all clearly like, yeah, we're on board with this. It's going to be a bit nuts. Let's just go. Because it's all like so seriously done, isn't it? Like, really, it's not like, it could have very easily been, like, very, very daft. And I just love the fact that, like, what's his name? He almost gives his Rolex away to, like, he's like, what, this piece of shit? Like, €20 in Barbès. And it's like, I loved all that. Like, the fact, like, Collet, the lieutenant, nearly gets, like, a real Rolex for, like, €30 or something. I love that. That was good fun. Because they find this cryptext, which is, like, it's like a message. It's difficult, this film, even to describe. It's wearing, isn't it? But it is a good film. But it's like, yeah, it's like a puzzle box, essentially, with like all the letters of the alphabet on it. Yeah, letters. and it's got a message around a papyrus scroll wrapped around a very thin vial of vinegar, a glass vial of vinegar. So if you can't force it open, the vinegar breaks. Papyrus gets dissolved by vinegar and your message lost forever. So you have to try and put in like this 5-letter word. And of course, like there's like millions of possibilities to try and find out like where, you know, the grail is. Again, extended, we see Silas hunting down the other grail guardians. Like, and it feels much more like a Hitman movie at that point. Cause he's like, he like kills one in a car. He like, shoots another one. It's like, oh, okay. So, because you get the impression that this isn't just like, it hasn't just started today. Like, we've just picked up in the middle of it. So, so again, it goes back to like you were saying, it's not just people, it's not just everything started this day because like Robert Langdon turns up. So, I quite like that about it. We finally meet arguably the best character in it, Sir Lee Teabing, the most. Well, I didn't just call him Teabag and have done with it. I don't know.
Hello.
Serene McKellen.
Again, and, second worst name.
Well, what's the worst name then? Go on.
Like I said, I think Erin Garosa is terrible. Lee Teabing's a terrible name. And also Sophie Neveu is fucking awful as a name. Like, I fucking hate it. It's so bad. It's just nothing. It's like French person name. Sophie Neveu. Perfect. I hate it. It really bothered me. Every time I heard it, it would get on my nerves. But yeah, Lee Teabing is just made up English person name.
Yeah, make him a sir. Make him a sir.
Make him a sir.
Just make him a sir, yeah. Did you get any trivia about Bezu Fashi's name?
No, I know it's French. It means it's... Fash is like angry.
It's like angry bastard, I think it translates to.
In slang, apparently, it's like, angry bastard. Again, which is just, these names are so on the nose, aren't they?
Well, maybe they had to be, maybe it's like Sleepy Hollow in that, like, there's so many characters you need to make them memorable.
It plays it so straight, though. You know, like this...
Well, yeah.
It tries to be very, very serious. And like I said, this could have very easily been like a National Treasure thing, where... again, as like a sort of conspiracy at the centre, but it's very much like more lighthearted and just doesn't take itself as seriously. But this takes itself really seriously, and then people will just come up with the stupidest name that you've ever heard.
And I thought you were going to say like Remy. Remy was bad as well. Like
Remy's bad as well. Again,
Remy Teabing flipping butler and chief sauce maker. Yeah.
Just all the French people have worst names.
Played by Jean Yves Bertelou. There you go. apologies. What do you expect me to do? really, how would what more? I don't know. I'll give it a go. So then we have this whole scene around the table where, you know, they have the Council of Nicaea, where they have the Last Supper by Leonardo da Vinci, and they look at the picture and they see that, is it Mary Magdalene and Scotoma, the eye sees what the brain wants it to see, and the chalice and the blade and all that kind of thing. But it's funny because, like, the Last Supper, like, that was not a renowned picture. Like, they cut a doorway into it. Like, that's how much they cared about it. Like, there's a doorway in the bottom of it, like the top of a door. So they weren't that fussed about it for years. So I can't, but I like that kind of looking at something. And even she's like, well, just because you painted it doesn't mean it's true.
Mm.
And then they start going through all the, like, these gospels that weren't chosen in the Council of Nicaea, which was a real thing, which is, there's not a lot of, like, evidence from it, but there were gospels that weren't put into the Bible. Oh, it's interesting stuff. And basically, this is where it comes out that, you know, the greatest cover up in human history, the chalice, you know, the grail is not a cup, it's the shape of a woman's womb. Mm. And Mary Magdalene was Jesus's wife. Companion literally meant spouse. Again, things, definitions of words change. And they think this means that Mary was pregnant at the time of the crucifixion and she had a daughter called Sarah. Again, no offense, but why Sarah? Like, this is the kid of Jesus. And it's like, Jesus. And it's like, yeah, we'll call her Sarah. Why?
I know.
It's not very, like, I don't know. Like,
it doesn't come across as Sean, only, child, like, of,
really.
Only child of Jesus. Yeah, it's I don't really know. And it doesn't really matter either. It doesn't matter what she's called or anything. It just, like, the whole, they're talking about, like, oh, it's a real problem that she's a female. You know, it's an issue that it's a daughter, because it was like, at the time, there's all this stuff going into, like, you know, downplaying women and making women out to be the source of sin and shit.
The reason why it was, like, worse was because the pagans, who essentially was the religion before the Christians, they believed that one of the ways to heaven was through, like, making love with a woman, because that was, a woman was a way into heaven, essentially. But then the modern church, so Christianity says, which obviously would have been Catholic Church before Church of England, let's not get into that, would be saying, like, oh no, the only way to heaven is through us, and it's like, and he who holds the keys to heaven controls the world. And then the reason for the whole, the witch hunts that killed hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions, and the publishing of the Malleus Maleficarum, or the Devil's, is it the Devil's Hammer?
Hammer of the Witches.
Hammer of the Witches, that was basically to try and kill the descendant of Jesus. Like, that was nothing to do with witches.
Just kill all women.
Well, yeah, like, kill any free-thinking women. Like, that was essentially...
I know.
I mean, but then, if in the context of the story, this, like, fictional story they're talking about, that makes sense, because if this is, like, if this is such a massive secret that it will bring the church down, it's like, it's not, like, a small price to pay, of course, but it is, like, right, we're going to get this done.
It's been established that these people will kill to protect their power, you know, them potentially putting in, you know, this kind of attack against women generally, or free-thinking women, is within the context of this film, you know, like, there's the, like, religious extremists we see in this film. It's like, of course they would do that. Why would they not do that? I think it works. Yeah. That scene works really well for me. I think the whole like, little demonstration, like, the little PowerPoint he brings up, basically, with all the paintings and how it weaves through history, it all works really well.
I just love how it gets. He's, like, clearly got that all set up ready. Mm-hmm. for when guests come round.
You've done it before.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Can you imagine, like, if you've got, if you're speaking at dinner parties, you go around to Wiz House every week and you think, oh,
Titley, not again, not again.
Yeah, he's got all the books around. He's like, oh yeah, there was this and there was this, and it's like,
and Langdon, and you're like, God's sake,
he's like, they didn't even agree on that. Yeah, yeah. He's like, you're twisting the facts. He's like, it's semantics. He's like, it's not semantics. And I love the fact she cuts through it. And she's like, yeah, who is man? Who is God? How many people have been killed over this question? Because she says later on, like, she's not religious. She, and I figured this is where I've got this quote from, because I've used it before, that I don't believe in God, but I believe in people, and sometimes they can be kind. I love the good quote. Good writing as well. I think the writing gets very much overlooked in the film. But yeah, I mean, but he loves it, and he's like, if like the divine has chosen, who are you to deny her? And he's loving it, probably getting into it. And then the fact that the Silas turns up, and you realise later on, because it appears he just turns up out of nowhere, but obviously, spoilers, we find out that actually T-Bing, sneaky little devil, is the teacher. So he's basically wanted to solve this, and he's decided, right, well, I'm going to play them off against each other because, well, I don't know how. I don't think they say he's not got long to live, but he's clearly getting on, and he's not the best. So
he's desperate. He's kind of clearly,
yeah.
I see, he's clearly obsessed with it. Like, from how Langdon talks about him, it's like this is his thing. Like, he has been a scholar on. He's a Grail scholar.
Yeah.
So he's kind of getting desperate and.
But she calls it, though. Sophie calls it again. She says, I hope you can trust him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He doesn't even respond, but, you know, she's very much like, I hope you can trust this guy. Because we believe him, like, for a lot of this. I don't think it's obvious it's going to be him.
No.
And, like, he helps him escape to Switzerland, then they end up in London. And I love the way they like, although, I don't know if you noticed, but they use American police sirens instead of English.
I did.
It really does my head. And they do it at the end as well. It's like, who signed off on this?
I know.
I'm sure there was one person who was English or British who went, hang on a minute. It's so obvious. It's like, oh God.
It just draws you out of it. It's annoying.
Yeah.
It's a little detail, but it's the kind of thing. They're pretty good at, there's a lot of shit going on in this film, and in general, they clearly put a lot of effort into making it look like where you are. And a lot of it is like filmed in streets by looked of and actual like landmarks. And then it's just a little thing, but it's one of those little things that just like, oh, it's really annoying.
and I love the fact that they hide him in the car, and then he gets out and he's like, I've got a doctor's appointment. And he's like, if you want to arrest us, you're just going to have to shoot us. And then he looks at his butler and he's like, you can start with him. I love that. And then when he's like driving off and he's like, bad tip, and he's like, let him go. And then he just leans out the window and he's like, the French cannot be trusted. Like, always makes me laugh. Like, just, yeah, I love that. And again, like, later on we get more of Fash, more of Colette, more of a Ringo Ross, because Fash beats up a air traffic control guy because he's like desperate. He's like, can I have this flight plan, please? And the guy's like, I'm on break. And he's just scoffing a sandwich and he's like, I want it now. He's like, I'm on a break. So he basically just breaks the guy's nose. And it's like, oh, and then kicks 10 bells out of him. And then Colette appears and he's like, ripped the Land Rover to pieces, hasn't he? And he's like, new detective thing. And he's like, I let them get away and I've let God down. And he explains the bishop's been to him and all this, that and the other. And he's like, they've changed the flight plan to London. Like, we're going. We can deal with your investigation later. Don't worry about it. And he doesn't say that, but he says it without saying it. And again, what they add to this film, which is again isn't in the original cut, they add the fact that again the police find the wiretaps of the Guardians, which presumably Lee Teabing set up. Oh, that's what I take from it. That he's been tapping the Guardians to try and find out who they are.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Sarah's like, oh yeah, I was slightly awakened of it.
I got a little bit lost.
I like that Flash apologizes to them as well. I like to have that scene where, because in the original cut, he just kind of disappears. Because there's like a big confrontation. Silas turns up, gets shot dead by the police. Yeah. Then he accidentally shoots a Ringarosa and thinks he's killed him, so he's not bothered about dying. And then Fash apologizes to them, realizes that it was teething all along. And so I was going to say, it's just Man of Austin Powers. She was a fembot all along. Anyway, so I don't know where that came from. It's been a while since I did this. and then I like the fact that, like Robert's saying about, sometimes I wonder, like, if I wasn't alone down there in, like, the well, because that's how he got claustrophobic. They have that discussion about why can't God be, not God, sorry, why couldn't Jesus have been divine and a good father? And they go to the church, they go back to France. There's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And she finds her family, they're like, Sophie? And anyway, so I thought that was pretty good. I'm quite proud of that. And they're like, I'm your grandmother. And she didn't sound as manly as that. Don't worry. That would have been quite disconcerting.
I'm your grandmother.
I'm your grandmother. I wasn't, but yeah. I'm your grandmother. Get your bags. So she accepts that, and they're there to protect her and whatnot. And they think Mary Magdalene has been, like, hidden again. And he goes back to his hotel room at long last. I mean, if they kept the same room for him, we don't know. And he cuts his, like, chin shaving, and the blood runs down the plug hole, and he thinks of the Rose Line. And again, like, they put a few extra scenes in walking through Paris. So it must be knackered poor bugger. He gets to the Louvre again, and he gets to the pyramid and realises she's there, the blade and chalice. And they have all that, and he, like, kneels before her in, like, a knight's pose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like... And then the music swells. The music from Hans Zimmer is unbelievable as well. It's just great. And then it kind of ends. And I remember when I first watched it when I was a kid, and I thought, what the hell's that? What's that ending? Because, like, there was lots of things around this. Like, the Bourne films were a big thing then, and I remember it saying, like, oh, it's got the best, like, car chase since the Bourne Identity. And then you went and watched it, and it was... They reversed it, like, a flipping smart car, like down a road. Yeah. For about 2 minutes, and it was like, is that it? So it was a bit, like, kind of laughable, but again, I think it's a film that kind of does grow on you, and I do think the extended cut, if you did like the original cut, is worth watching.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's longer, but it does feel like a more complete film and a more complete story. Do you have any more trivia? I've got a bit of trivia, but...
Not much.
Any thoughts on the film?
No, I agree. Like I said, I think, like you said, if you like Da Vinci Code and you can just kind of go along with it and not question it too much, just, like, you know, enjoy it for what it is, it feels like the extended cut just makes a little bit more out of all these characters and just kind of justifies a little bit more why you have this cast. And like I said, everyone's motivations are just a bit clearer. And I really like that about the extended cut. Like I said, it just felt like you're saying, a more complete film. Just, like, it makes a bit more sense. It still kind of can, like I said, it to's and fro's a lot. It goes back and forth a lot, but it does all kind of come together in a way that makes a little bit more sense. Again, the ending, like saying, it is a weird ending, because it's one of those films where it feels like it's got two endings, where you have, like, the big revelation with Sophie and her family, and then she kind of starts to believe maybe that she is kind of, you know, this ancient direct descendant of Jesus and everything, and maybe that means a bit more. And, you know, at the end of the day, she's like, I'm happy, I've got a family, because she didn't have a family. And then, like I said, you think, oh, that's a nice place to wrap it up. And then you have, like, a second ending with Langdon finding, you know, the true resting place of Mary Magdalene. And up to that point, there was kind of like, well, Sophie knows this about herself now, but ultimately no one else would believe her, because unless they can directly tie it to the body, it doesn't really mean anything. But then making it so that Langdon has found that body, it kind of, like, it was a nice ambiguous ending, and then it's like they kind of brought it back again for some reason. So I don't like the ending, like the very, very ending. But
see, I quite like that because I think it, because he says he's not religious. So for me, I think it's, I think that ending can play, be played both ways, that you can either be brought to religion or that you can still not kind of still be agnostic, or even that you don't believe, but you can still have respect for the people who've laid their lives down for, to try and like keep that secret and all this kind of, because that, I don't know, I think, like you said, it, yeah, it's very ambiguous. So again, it's what you take from it, because it's a very unusual thing, like, to kneel before anyone. So, and he does kneel like a knight, like you could literally put a sword under his hands. It's very much so. Then it does open that question of, well, is he this knight that was destined to be on this quest? A little bit kind of like, you know, the Magi and the Mummy Returns, you know, little bit kind of like that. Was it always predestined, preordained?
But like when I was watching this film, I was thinking through pretty much all of it that like Langdon as a central character is probably the weakest character we have, because like beyond just having an interest in, you know, symbols, symbology, and being able to, you know, have an eidetic memory, and like this, the claustrophobia from the well thing, I couldn't really tell you much else about him and like what his motivations are and like why he's there. But
I
like,
do think the sequels flesh, sorry, I thought you finished, sorry, go on.
Do they flesh him out? Because it would be good.
Yeah, in the second one they do, because in the second one, even though Angels and Demons, the book came out before Da Vinci Code, they changed it a bit, like the script, so that like after this, he's known by the church. The church asked for his help. I won't tell you anymore.
Okay.
The church asked for his help, and he's like, I didn't think I'd embolden myself to the church. And like, oh, you haven't. Like, but it did make you, and they're trying to remember the word, like, it did make you, formidable, he's like, formidable. So like, they go out of him for help, and it, like, the third film, which isn't great, but it fleshes out a bit more about, I think his parents both died when he was young, it fleshes him out a bit more, but the second one, I think the second one's probably better than this, arguably, it's a better film, and it's, I just love it, I think it's great. Anyway, so he, like, they have a bit more in that about, like, the way it's been, and it delves a bit more into, like, do you believe, like, it's just different. It's good, the set, because he goes through a lot in the second one. Like, it's a, you'll get it when you watch it type thing. I do think he's much more the main character in the second one, because the woman in the second one isn't as prevalent as, like, Sophie Nouveau is in this one.
Because Sophie is very much, you know, she is the main character of this film. You know, she's the one that actually goes through, like, an arc. And, like, I like the idea, like you said, of him kneeling at the end in this very, like, reverential and, like, almost religious manner, because he doesn't show himself to be religious in any way. And he's, like, got an interest in the history of it, but he's not, he doesn't have any kind of faith or anything. I would have liked them to have had a bit more to that of him.
Yeah, they do in the second one. The second one, they flesh it out of, like, the books he's writing and what he's trying to get done, and because of what's happened in this film, it's affected him trying to get research. It's good, because then you get, like, you get bits where, like, he walks in and Stellan Skarsgård's character, who's, like, the head of the Swiss Guard in the Vatican, is like, oh, thank God, the symbologist's here. And it's like, you're like, the second one is good, and I think it fleshes him out more, because he is much more front and centre. Like, he does a lot more, like, yeah, the lady, the woman, she does tag along with him, but she is very much, she's there because of, like, her job. She needs to be there to, like, for what she can physically help him with. It'll make more sense. Whereas in this, it's very much like, Sophie Nouveau is, like, the main character as much as he is. So, yeah, that's a good one. The only, the kind of about the response to the film, so it was directed by Ron Howard, who, even though, like, if someone said, oh, it was your favourite director, you probably wouldn't spring to mind. I do love some of his films. You've got Apollo 13, Rush, which I don't even like Cars, and I like that film. One of the best films I've seen in the last 10 years. Absolutely love it. I've actually got the poster of it on the wall right now. In the Heart of the Sea, the 2015 film, which is like based on the origins of Moby Dick, which is unbelievable. Great film. So he's done some absolute. He did A Beautiful Mind, of course, he did The Grinch, or How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey. He's done some awesome films. And he actually did that film while dressed as The Grinch one day. Because Jim Carrey was like, this is torture, you've got to do this. And he was like, yeah, I'm not doing it again. But he said that he realised he was taking a risk by agreeing to make this film. And he was like, if you're not willing to take some chances, particularly at this stage of my career, then what are you doing? I know I've been commercially successful, but I'm not really a guy looking for safe, middle-of-the-road success. And that actually plays more into In the Heart of the Sea, because that's a great film, but it did flop at the box office. It didn't kind of find an audience, but it is, I love that film. If you haven't seen that, Sarah, I recommend that one to you. And again, Sarean McKellen spoke around the controversy of the film and said, like, not talking about them saying, do you think there should have been a disclaimer at the start of the film? And he was saying, well, shouldn't other things have disclaimers? Like, not that it's true, but not that it's factual, but that it's a jolly good story. And he said, and I think audiences are clever enough and bright enough to separate out fact and fiction and discuss the thing after they've seen it, which is right. I think the film does give the audience credit to be like, yeah, you're clever enough to follow this. We're not going to spoon feed you. We're going to let you figure out what's going on. Sprinkle a few bits for a rewatch. And that goes for the extended cut or the original cut. The original cut is good enough, but this just like fleshes out a little bit more. It makes a bit more sense as to why the characters are doing things as they are, which is pretty cool. But if you haven't seen it, I do massively recommend it. Would you like to tell... have you got anything else to say? I'm sorry, I just...
No, I was going to say, did you have any more trivia? I don't know if I
I'll just... I thought you were... Yeah, I thought you'd do that, so I left quite... There was loads.
I read a lot of it's not very interesting.
I used to... When I first started doing the podcast, as people will know, I used to go and look at the trivia... But the thing is like everybody gets a trivia from the same place. Mm-hmm. IMDb or the Wikipedia leaks. And very rarely, unless like you're lucky to have, like, I might have a couple of the making of Godzilla or Independence Day, those kind of books they used to do. I've got the making of War Horse, which I'm yet to read. Very rarely do they do those books anymore. Unless you've got something like that, you're not going to have like much trivia. You can scour the internet for like YouTube clips and look and see what people said. But really, everyone's got the same stuff. So I don't do half as much trivia as I used to, because everyone's got the same stuff, so...
It's just not a lot. It's all about, like, oh, this person was originally in the running for, you know, Langdon, or this person was going to be Sophie, and it's like, I'm not really interested in that, to be honest.
Unless it's really out there. unless it's really
like
out there.
Like Rowan Atkinson or something.
Like Christopher Walken. You know, so yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting. But no, would you like to tell everybody where they can find you? And I was going to say something else then.
Yeah. So you can find me as Weird Horizon, and I do podcasts on just weird topics.
That's the short title, by the way. It's not a nickname for Sarah, but the podcast title.
That's me. And at the moment, I am writing a series on vampires, have been for ages, so I've said this to you about four times, but writing a series on vampires and history of vampires, like folkloric vampires, literary ones, you know, all the way through, so that will be out at some point. But yeah, that's where you can find me, so just Weird Horizon.
Yeah, you could say it'll come out this year. We're only 5 days into it, but you know,
that's true. It will come out this year, I can promise that.
Go out and check out Sarah's stuff. It's fascinating. She does like cryptids and all sorts. It's interesting stuff. The Men in Black series is a good place to start, my opinion. I like that. That was a good
Very
series.
Much fun.
The myth behind like the origins, right? Men in Black, Will Smith, Tommy. Yeah, the origins of that. The idea that these people would like knock at your door and be like, hey, you know this research you're doing? Yeah, might be best if you stop that, mate. Why? I'm just saying, it might be best for you and your family if you stop that. Are you threatening me? No, I'm not threatening you. I'm just saying it might be best for you if you just let that go. Like that kind of...
Yeah.
You know.
I'd maybe just not if I were you, if I were in your position. I just wouldn't.
Yeah. Bake a nice cake or something. Help us shift Mary Magdalene. We're forever moving her about. We're knackered. Did a big storm sarcophagus as well?
How did they do that? Like, they must have had another entrance to that room, because, like, we saw them get into that room through, like, a little narrow stone staircase. Like, you can't just... How are they going to get around?
Well, people get bloody windows taken out to bring a sofa in.
I know.
Like, you're going to have to... Can you imagine? Can we get this big stained glass window taken out? Why? Or we need to bring in something.
We need to move things.
Yeah, how did they get it down those steps? I'd love to see that Chuckle Brothers episode, wouldn't you?
There must be another entrance to that room. There's got to be, like, another way in that we just don't see. I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
They didn't fold her down those steps.
Part of the mystery, though? Jesus, that's a
dark thought. Well, maybe they just pass through walls. I don't know. Maybe it's
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
And on that very blasphemous note, thank you for listening. You're listening to Sean, I'm the host. It's Review It Yourself, that's what it's called. The podcast with the sigh. No politics, no pandering, absolutely no point. Now a part of the Podpack Collective. Thank you to you at home. I was going to say at home for listening. Where do I think I am? You could be at home, could be in the car. I listen to them in the car. I love a podcast in the car. Although, when you pick one that's not very good, it's a bit of a nightmare, because you can't pick your phone up, turn it off. But anyway, never mind. Well, you can't hear anyway. So, such a random
Someone's going to be subjected to this. They're, like, driving home, and
why have they spent, like, 20 minutes of this review talking about shifting Mary Magdalene's corpse around? Like, what are they, what am I listening to? This is disgraceful. But yeah, we don't advocate moving a corpse. Right, just end the episode there. That'll do. I'm done. I'll just get myself in trouble. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Thank you to Sarah for joining me. Much appreciated.
Welcome to Shatsunami, a variety podcast that discusses topics from gaming and films to anime and general interests.
Previously on Shatsunami, we've analysed what makes a good horror game, conducted a retrospective on Pierce Brosnan's run as James Bond, and listened to us take deep dives into both the Sonic and Halo franchises.
Also, if you're an anime fan, then don't forget to check us out on our sub-series, Chatsunani, where we dive into the world of anime. So far, we've reviewed things like Death Note, Princess Mononoke, and the hit Beyblade series.
If that sounds like your cup of tea, then you can check us out on Spotify, iTunes, and all good podcast apps.
As always, stay safe,
stay awesome, and most importantly,
stay hydrated. Welcome to Shatsunami, a variety podcast that discusses topics from gaming and films to anime and general interests.
Previously on Shatsunami, we've analysed what makes a good horror game, conducted a retrospective on Pierce Brosnan's run as James Bond, and listened to us take deep dives into both the Sonic and Halo franchises.
Also, if you're an anime fan, then don't forget to check us out on our sub-series, Chatsunani, where we dive into the world of anime. So far, we've reviewed things like Death Note, Princess Mononoke, and the hit Beyblade series.
If that sounds like your cup of tea, then you can check us out on Spotify, iTunes, and all good podcast apps.
As always, stay safe,
stay awesome, and most importantly,
stay hydrated.